Washington is the most trade-dependent state in the country, but our regulatory process for trade and infrastructure investments has sadly become longer and more uncertain, jeopardizing our ability to lead the way on trade. Keep Washington Competitive, a business and labor coalition, believes that by fostering a regulatory environment that provides certainty and encourages investment, we will ensure our state is positive to thrive. It is paramount that our lawmakers and regulators work together with business and labor to sustain our state's vital trade industries for future generations of Washingtonians. Learn more at KeepWashingtonCompetitive.com.
Welcome to the Sheriff's Report with your host, Spokane County Sheriff Ozzie Knezovich. Each week, Ozzie brings you up to date on the challenges and progress here in Spokane County as seen through his eyes. The Sheriff's Report is sponsored by Keep Washington Competitive. Now, here's Ozzie.
Radio base to the Sheriff. Come in, Sheriff.
Folks, if it's morning when you're watching this, we tape it. My show usually plays in the afternoon slots. Today, we're having a discussion with the Democratic Chair, Andrew Viviano. We're continuing a discussion that we had last week. For those of you that are viewing this through the stream, this is our first attempt at streaming a show. So you just got done watching us, and since this is a tape show, I have to kind of let you know what you're seeing here. We're talking about a rally that was held by the GOP for President Trump, comments that were made. So in the first part, I covered some of my opening comments. Andrew, I'd like to run through a couple of the other comments just briefly and get to the meat of the other comment. My last comment at that particular rally. So after I talked about, you know, how we got here as a nation, you know, what did President Trump tap into that won him the presidency? So we covered that in the last show. Then I moved on to immigration. Andrew, I talked to a lot of immigrants from all over the world, all parts of the world. I've had members of the Ethiopian community come in and chat. Very nice, great people. Go to a lot of community events, as you know. You've seen me at many of those events. And the common theme, and this is what I said that day, the common theme of every time I talk to those folks is this: Sheriff, we didn't come here to change America. We came here to take part in America's freedoms. Exactly. They're hardworking people, very hardworking people. You know, the owner of JK Boots up on Wellesley and Francis, great family, working very, very hard, do a great job. So if you want customized boots or good tailoring, go there. And they are very dedicated to this country.
Right.
And I said, and I welcome them here, right, because they add. And for me, it's still close to me because I'm second generation. Mm-hmm. My grandfather and my great-grandfather came from this the old country. When my grandfather... my great-grandfather received a citizenship. He said, I am finally a member of my country. He considered America his country before he even became a citizen. Why? Because of the great freedoms. Mm-hmm. Because he had an opportunity to make his way, and they did. You know, my grandfather taught himself how to read and write English, ended up being a mine foreman, which is not a small task. Being a mine supervisor is very difficult when you take a look at everything that needs to happen there.
I'm with you. I'm actually, all of my great-grandparents were from the old country as well, Italy and Ireland. And I think people forget on the immigration aspect is that immigrants who come to this country self-select this country for a reason. They're not forced to come here of all other countries. They come here because they're drawn to the values. And think about the fact that refugees, for instance, from Syria or anywhere else, they go through a two-year-plus process to be screened to come to America, and it's much easier to go elsewhere. And if you don't, if you want to live in a place where there's Sharia law, where there isn't the same sort of freedom, in which you're as a Muslim-majority country, they just go there. Jordan, Syria, Iran, Saudi Arabia, all these places that where the vast majority of refugees go, is more comfortable, similar to where they came from. The reason why they choose to come here and go through all of that extra hassle, more than hassle, it's incredibly difficult, is because they are drawn to our values. And that's what makes America so great, is that we're not Americans by ethnicity, we're Americans by values.
Exactly.
And we are stronger that way. And so I'm more worried about that more than anything else with the new change in immigration, is that we're going to start losing that biggest advantage we have in the world. Because if our perception around the world is that we're not open to other people, we're going to start having people select to go somewhere else, and we're not going to get the best and brightest like we've been getting for our entire history.
You bring up getting the best and the brightest. Let's face it, we do. In many, many instances, people come to this country who are very highly intelligent people, and they do great things in our country. And then I spoke about immigration laws, and I pointed out, I've been sheriff under three presidents, Bush, President Obama, President Trump, same laws, nothing's changed. Mm-hmm. President Obama enforced the same laws. But there seems to be this great fear right now. And I'm going, folks, nothing changed. It's the same law. I did chastise the governor because I truly believe he stepped over his bounds. Here's why I believe that, Andrew. Anytime an elected official decides they're going to pick and choose what they're going to do, what laws, it's a slippery slope. Mm-hmm. Because before you know it, it's not just what law we're going to enforce. It's what law on what person we're going to enforce it. And that can never happen. If all those great things we just said about America mm-hmm. and why people want to come here, it's because we are a country of laws and we obey our laws and we're supposed to have that idea. So I do think that the governor is setting a bad precedent in that, going, look, I know of no agency in the state of Washington that's out there profiling anybody based on race or religion. Because it's illegal. You and I both know that. Mm-hmm. We run into situations, we deal with the situation, and we bring in the federal partner to deal with that situation. If our federal partners ask us for help, we're going to help them. But that's just kind of the way it's supposed to work. Where am I missing this? Help me understand that one.
You know, I was a prosecutor. Mostly the civil side, but I did some criminal cases at the U.S. Attorney's Office. A lot of what I did was immigration-related. In fact, I was kind of the guy who did a lot of the appeals for people who were being charged and often convicted of illegal reentry after deportation. So I know a fair amount about this, and I think that there needs to be a better conversation and educate people about what we're actually talking about. People don't know how the system actually works. People think that when someone says they're not going to do the job of ICE, that means they're going to completely shelter and shield illegal immigrants, even if they're drug dealers.
That's the message sent.
That's
that
not
truly
the
is
and
message
so there
sent.
Needs to be a conversation about the fact that certainly local law enforcement and state law enforcement uses all the tools at their disposal. If they have someone who's a violent criminal and also an undocumented immigrant, they will try to get that person out of the country as well because it's a tool they have. But I don't think people on the right really understand what law enforcement's often saying, which is that for us to keep people safe, we need to be able to speak to witnesses and victims and have them speak to us and be honest. And they won't do that if they think that every single person wearing a badge is an ICE agent is going to deport them. And so we're just looking at a balance of the federal government has its job of enforcing immigration laws. We have our job of public safety. And sometimes we have to separate those two things so that we can do our job better. It's not about being soft or about not caring about the laws of immigration. It's about being smart, I think.
You used the exact word. You have to be smart about
right.
what we're doing here. Because if we create such an environment and little nuances, the term undocumented is often used to soften the fact that undocumented means they're here illegally. When you take
but a
look,
person isn't illegal, though. That's what
right.
I say, that their status is illegal.
Exactly.
They entered illegally, or they overstayed
exactly.
their visa illegally. But
they're
if they
here,
make the person themselves yeah. illegal, yeah. I think it's a step too far.
Yeah. They're here illegally.
Right.
But you have to remember there are certain times when that undocumented – when you say undocumented, what people hear is you're just trying to soft shoe that. And
right.
you know, it really isn't. It is as it is. Undocumented means they're here illegally, and we do need them if they know who the true bad guys are to be able to come in. And a lot of people don't understand this, that if they come in and they do give us information, that's almost about a 92% chance of getting a visa. And, you know, it's not that the system is totally stacked against the victim or the person who wants to give the information. It's actually they're willing to reward people that are willing to come in and help. Major discussion that really needs to happen. I'm going to try to maybe even have another town hall on that one because there's too much fear. And, again, fear leads to what? Anger. Anger tends to lead to hate, and we just keep building.
Like Yoda said, yeah.
We just keep building that one.
Right.
And, so that was the comments on immigration.
Okay.
You know, I welcome immigrants. However, you know, we're going to do our jobs, and I think the governor has stepped over his bounds because that's what it translates to. That's what people heard. If he didn't mean that, he needs to maybe clarify that. And then we come to the state of law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you notice, pretty much every one of my topics has dealt with what I deal with, law enforcement. Immigration is part of law enforcement. Right now in America, we have created a situation. And, Andrew, I don't say this as hype. This is something we're seeing. It's something we started seeing in a big way last year. You had undertones of it in 15, but in 16 it really started ramping up. And after July 7th, it really super ramped up. That's when 5 Dallas police officers died. Last year, I had 3 deputies that left the agency because their families couldn't handle the fact that police officers were being hunted down and assassinated. That's exactly why they left. My fear is we as a society may have really damaged ourselves, maybe a tipping point even, because right now, nationally, you can't hardly find anybody who wants to wear a badge. You ask a kid out there, would you like to be a police officer? No. Explain that one to me. Are you crazy? Have you seen what's happening? And that's basically feedback across the board. Oakland, 50% strength. San Diego, they just pushed 300 detectives back to patrol. Talked to a commander from the Boston area. They just put out a test. They only got 360 applicants. They usually get thousands. How many openings do you have? More than what we have that put it in. Our last test, we had 30 people put in. Out of that 30 people, I'll be lucky lucky if I get one qualified candidate. In the Boston area, they're starting to drop their standards to now accept people with low-level felonies on their record. Mm-hmm. This is critical. And I think we've really – I told Kathy McMorris, Representative McMorris-Rogers, this is a national issue. You, at the national level, need to help us do something to rectify the damage that's been done here. So when I say that, it's also a little bit personal for me.
Mm-hmm. Of course it is.
Because my son graduates from the law enforcement academy next month. My son-in-law is currently a deputy, and I have 224 members of an agency that I consider family, and I worry about each and every time they go out. And I really worry about the world that my son's stepping into. And Andrew, I fully recognize that there are emotions on all sides of this issue. You cannot deny, and law enforcement be very foolish to deny, that there are those in the minority community that truly fear us.
Absolutely.
You can't deny that.
Mm-hmm.
You can't deny that there are those in the minority community that feel that law enforcement targets them. Mm-hmm. You can't deny that.
Absolutely.
You can't deny that there are those in the minority community that have lost faith in the judicial system, the justice system. And let's face it, the pastor of the United States, there have been times that people in law enforcement have been used in those oppressive type of situations.
Exactly.
So with that full acknowledgement, you have to also acknowledge on the other side that there are law enforcement officers that are very, very distressed at the fact that they're being called racist, that people of minority consider them gun-toting thugs willing to kill young African-Americans, because that's not what they even believe in. So we have this dichotomy out there. And we had a president, in my opinion, that was perfectly socially positioned.
What do you mean by that?
What do I mean by that? I'm glad you brought that up. President Obama came from a situation where he understands what it's like to be working class. He understands what it's like to be middle American, if you will, as far as economics, even though his family fairly educated. He comes from a biracial background,
mm-hmm.
perfectly socially positioned. When I say socially positioned, he comes from a spectrum where he can see both sides.
Right.
All right? And social position gives you the ability to see both sides. Sometimes, you know, you and I, we come from a social position that we may not always be able to
right.
quite relate to the other side. President Obama, in my opinion, though, had the ability to take a look at both sides of that coin.
And you don't think he did.
And that's why I say he was perfectly socially positioned.
What's odd for the rest of us is that many of us saw that he did take both sides. I mean, very clearly. I mean, what's different about him was he took both sides, because he not only went to the funerals of the Dallas police officers and delivered beautiful eulogies. No president in modern history has gone to a police officer's funeral before and talked about the importance of law enforcement. Every speech I ever saw him give, he spoke about the heroism of law enforcement, how we need to support everyone doing these difficult jobs, dangerous jobs. The only thing that was different is that, again, he took both sides. And if you take both sides, you're going to get criticism on both sides. Well, so he did say things that made people annoyed, but that was about being both on both sides.
Yeah, let's Let's take a closer look at that record you just presented.
Mm-hmm.
Because here's where he didn't take both sides, all right? And he didn't take both sides. And within 6 months of his presidency, he stepped into something that he shouldn't have stepped into, and he himself would later go, I shouldn't have done that.
Right, and he did. Right? He apologized.
I shouldn't have gone there.
That's about this kind of thing, acting stupidly when he arrested the Harvard professor.
When you say that police officers acted stupidly, you and I carry more weight if I say that. When you say that, okay.
Right, I understand. Right?
When the President of the United States says that law enforcement acted stupidly, that carried the maximum weight.
Was it a good idea, you think, to arrest the Professor Gates at his front door?
I don't know the full story. I haven't been able to look at that IA file.
Okay.
And Andrew, all the people that looked at that whole case study, what they've said is both sides carried responsibility here.
Right. But
both sides.
If I could, I think what you're bringing up, I'm so glad we're finally here because I think it's less important to talk about how we talk to each other and more important just to talk about the substance of what it is we are differing on.
Right.
And that's how we get respectful dialogue.
Right. So let me wrap up that thought that you brought forward about him seeing both sides. Because that's not how we saw it, all right? I'll never forget, July of 16. July 5th, if I have the dates correct, there was an officer-involved shooting in Baton Rouge that was caught on video.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it was July 6th or 7th that President Obama made a statement. He was over in Europe about that situation. And he did basically the same thing he did but way back over here within the 6 months of his presidency. He spoke about something that he didn't have all the facts about. And I listened very carefully to that particular address. I was on vacation. And when it was done, I went, oh, my goodness, this is going to get worse. And July 7th, five Dallas police officers died. Now, here's where I truly believe the president failed. Yet, had he done just this one little piece, and if he had done this back at Ferguson in August of 2014, I think we may have avoided some of this radicalized hate that came out of some of these instances. In a perfect world, leadership and all leaders get blamed for everything. I know that. I get to wear all the blame, Andrew.
Right.
I feel that. Had the president done simply this, folks, calm down. Stop it. Stop it now. Calm down. We do not know the facts of the situation. Media, and I would have addressed media because media played a huge role in this. They are not innocent in what happened in this country in the last few years. Media, knock it off. You don't know the facts of this. What we have is rhetoric right now that's out there. Stop it. I'm looking at this. I promise you I will keep my eye on this. I will have this investigation. I will make sure that this investigation is done correctly. And if law enforcement has acted wrongly, I'll hold them accountable. And if they didn't, I want to stand behind him. Now, had he did those two things in any of these situations, going to calm down, and if we did do it wrong, Andrew, you're looking at somebody that's held 63 people accountable.
Mm-hmm.
Law enforcement's not afraid of that. But holding us accountable, and when we do it right, going, folks, did it right, Had he done those things, I think he would have mitigated much of this. And that's where I come from. So what say you?
Well, I got a lot to say. Maybe we should wait to another segment if you have time.
We can.
It's a big issue that needs a long discussion, because I think there's something really deep that needs to get down here. I think just to preface it, you're talking about getting a relationship that's good again. And I think all relationships have the same basic rules, marriage or friendship or whatever. If we're talking to our wives and our wives are mad at us, just defending ourselves isn't going to solve the problem.
Okay.
We have to reach out and address the concerns of our wives and what it is that makes them mad at us. And we're playing a lot of defense, but no one has stopped and had a real conversation that just talks about the pain and suffering of the communities that are affected by some of the worst of the societal's ills. So we talk about the shooting, but no one's talked about the other DOJ report after Michael Brown that said, yes, the officer was cleared, he didn't break the law, but the department had a systemic for years. I think the average person in Ferguson had three different fines on them. The average person, like a household, it was egregious. Where is the outrage
over
that? Okay,
they're hitting a hard break here.
Okay.
We're going to come back to that, because that is a very good discussion to have.
Okay.
We are going to come back to that. Folks, this is Sheriff Ozzie Knezovich with Andrew Briviano. We're going to continue this discussion about the societal side of this, because that is a very important aspect, and I want to get into that. So we're going to come back after a break. Have a great weekend for those of you who are going to hear this on the radio, and have a great day.
The Sheriff's Report is a joint production of SpokaneTalksOnline.com and KTW 630 AM and 96.5 FM, which are solely responsible for its content. Ask a question, recommend a guest, and hear this program again online anytime at SpokaneTalksOnline.com. Have a safe day. Over and out.
Washington is the most trade-dependent state in the country, but our regulatory process for trade and infrastructure investments has sadly become longer and more uncertain, jeopardizing our ability to lead the way on trade. Keep Washington Competitive, a business and labor coalition, believes that by fostering a regulatory environment that provides certainty and encourages investment, we will ensure our state is positive to thrive. It is paramount that our lawmakers and regulators work together with business and labor to sustain our state's vital trade industries for future generations of Washingtonians. Learn more at keepwashingtoncompetitive.com.